When elections end, presidential transitions begin. But that process is not always easy. And in American history, these rocky handoffs can have consequences beyond Inauguration Day. This week on America Interrupted from the PBS NewsHour, we look back at the choppy transitions that shaped the country.
Between the moment that Lincoln is elected in November and the moment that he takes office in March, the country basically fell apart.
What made these transitions so difficult? And how long until things get better? Listen and subscribe to America Interrupted wherever you get your podcasts.
And now to the analysis of Shields and Brooks. That is syndicated columnist Mark Shields and New York Times columnist David Brooks. Hello to both of you. So let's begin with the news this evening. The Supreme Court saying that they do not have standing to take this case filed by the state of Texas challenging the election results in four states that voted for Joe Biden over Donald Trump. This is a case gotten a lot of attention, or the suit, I should say, because there were 17 states, many states, attorneys general signed on, two-thirds of the Republican members of the House. But now the Supreme Court has thrown it out, with dissent, we should say, by Justices Alito and Thomas. But David, what does this say about the state of our politics right now with regard to this election result?
Well, the court system has hung in there. And I should point out that all three Trump-appointed justices sided with the majority on this one. And it's simply written in the Constitution that state legislatures get to control their own elections. And the state of Texas doesn't get to tell Michigan and Pennsylvania and other states whether their elections are firm or not. It was just an outrageous suit from the beginning, one of the desperate ploys Trump has tried. The shameful thing, of course, is that 126 House Republicans signed on to it and a bunch of attorney generals. It's a party that has just lost any touch with democracy. Somebody said on Twitter today, Trumpianity is a very strange religion. And fortunately, unlike the legislative branch on the Republican side, the judicial branch has stayed true and faithful to the obvious meaning of the Constitution.
Mark, as you watch this drama unfold, what do you make of it at this point now that the Supreme Court has weighed in?
Well, I think we're in the final chapter, Judy. At least I hope so. I don't ever ask that people on the other side agree with me. I do ask that you believe in what you say and the position you take. And this was an example of, base hypocrisy on the part of House Republicans. There are 153 safe Republican House seats in the House of Representatives, that is, that Republicans are control or dominant in. And what they're terrified, the members there are primary. They're being primaried by a Donald Trump supporter who said, you didn't stand with the president. And where the Republicans are in a terrible position at this point. They desperately want the Trump voters, the 11 million he brought in over 4 years ago, for example. But they don't want Donald Trump. They desperately want Donald Trump gone. And so what the last thing in the world they want to do is in any way incur his wrath for fear he'll do to them what he did to Mark Sanford, Jeff Sessions in Alabama, and that is punish them for not being 110% Trumpists.
But in the process, David, are they doing damage to our democracy?
Immense damage. I mean, they're calling an election for millions and millions of people into question. As we've talked about before, 77% of Trump backers think it was a fraudulent election. So where do we go going forward? They're trying to not alienate Trump voters, but the 126 House members, including people like Kevin McCarthy, the leaders, are basically telling his story, and they're telling his comeback story. They're giving every pretext for him to run again in 2024 and continue to make this Donald Trump's party. And so if they wanted to get rid of Donald Trump, this was, in my view, the worst way to do it, because they've signed on to the gospel, and now they're more or less stuck with it.
Mark, do you see long-lasting damage here? Or is this something that
Yes.
the country can get through?
Yes, beyond the politics of it, Judy, the position taken is undemocratic. It's hypocritical. It's just indefensible. And when you're talking about elections, I mean, I would assume that all the Republican House members from Michigan and Wisconsin and Georgia and Pennsylvania who signed onto this suit would summarily resign from the House because they are saying that they were elected in a criminal election. It's certainly this illegality that they allege out of thin air wasn't limited just to the presidential vote. So I just find it beyond when I say that they want the Trump voters without Donald Trump. They can't wait for Donald Trump to be gone. I mean, how they quiver in fear about him. They're terrified of him. It's not born of affection or anything of the sort or high regard. It's born of rank fear, and that has to be demeaning for every Republican in the House who signed on. Liz Cheney, the third member of the House leadership from Wyoming, did not, and good for her.
David, let me ask you both about something else the Congress is not doing in this instance, and that's finding a way to come up with relief, help for people suffering in this pandemic. It's been months and months. They've come down to the wire. They've figured out a way to fund the government another few days, but they still don't have COVID relief. What is the holdup here? And do you see them getting through this?
Well, this is a foundational problem, too. You know, if faith in God collapses, then a church collapses. If faith in our institutions and each other collapses, then the nation collapses. And so undermining the election is one piece of that. But the unwillingness to recognize the legitimacy of views on the other side is another piece of it. And we've had 5 months of people unwilling to recognize the legitimacy of their views and come to meet them halfway. We finally, last week, had a legislature behave like it's supposed to behave, where we had 8 senators who created a compromise along with members of the Problem Solvers Caucus in the House. And they created a very reasonable, and to me, on the merits, a very good compromise on how to get COVID relief. To their great credit, Nancy Pelosi and Chuck Schumer said, okay, this is our framework. Mitch McConnell won't go there. And so he's not willing to do the work of legislation. He says that that compromise will not work with Republicans. Well, Mitch McConnell's position won't work with Democrats. So that's what politics exists for. And so it's just another piece of a fundamentally broken political system.
Mark, do you see a way through this?
I do, Judy. I think it's unthinkable to me that they will not pass a COVID relief bill. I mean, we're talking about Americans on the eve of Christmas without the resources to feed their children, to heat their homes, to pay their rent. We're not talking about some giveaway to anybody. We're not talking about a major stimulus. We're talking about human survival and human dignity. And I just can't believe that the Republicans, Mitch McConnell, who was threatened by this, they're all consumed with the February 5th election in Georgia. And if you're Kelly Loeffler and David Perdue running in those special Senate elections, and you have to stand up there and defend that the Republican Senate was the stumbling block to sending relief to American families in desperate need at Christmas time, I don't think so. So I think that finally urgency and political survival will intervene. What threatens Mitch McConnell, the Republican majority leader, is a leader has to be able to deliver his troops. Right now, he's got a problem because he doesn't have a majority of his caucus on this side. And David's right about the bipartisan group meeting, but they represent a threat to leadership. I give Speaker Pelosi credit for accepting the act of the bipartisan negotiation. But Mitch McConnell, if a leader is going to be held hostage by bipartisan leaders, groups negotiating a fair deal, then, oh my goodness, there goes your power. Because in Washington, the perception of power is power. If I think you have power, you do. And if enough people think you have power, then you do. And once the doubts about your power, and I think that's where McConnell finds himself right now.
David, in the time we have left, I do want to ask you about President-elect Biden. He's been introducing more of the top people in his administration, the people he wants to serve. I guess the one who's getting the most criticism or attention that has been critical is Lloyd Austin, the retired Army general, to be Secretary of Defense. But there are others. It's interesting, a number of familiar faces from the Obama administration. What do you make of some of the senior picks he's made so far?
Well, Joe Biden has picked people he really knows. People he knows well. He spent a lot of time with Lloyd Austin in Iraq when he was vice president. He's picked Dennis McDonough for the VA, who, by the way, is one of the most fundamentally decent people I've ever covered in public life. These are, by and large, almost entirely very good people, but very familiar. Susan Rice over now at the domestic side. And so they're people he knows, he trusts, who will be ready on day one. And so it is really Obama 3 in that sense. I also share some of the concerns with Lloyd Austin, not for anything having to do with Lloyd Austin and his performance, but there's a reason we have this rule, this tradition, and also a rule that you don't have generals switching right over to the defense secretary. It's about civilian control. It's about picking people who have distance from the current military brass. And that is a very solid and sensible rule. And in the Jim Mattis case, where we also had to get an exemption, that struck me as an extreme circumstance where getting Jim Mattis in there was so important, it was worth breaking the rule. Now there must be a lot of very qualified people like Michelle Flournoy who could be Secretary of Defense. I don't quite see why we run this risk of traversing what is a sensible principle.
And Mark, what is your assessment of some of these Biden, some of the main Biden picks so far?
Well, Judy, I think in dramatic contrast to his predecessor, Joe Biden, you know, was knocked by his political opponents for having spent 47 years in Washington. He knows these people. He's worked with them. He knows their strengths and their weaknesses. If they turn out to be lemons, it's because Joe Biden picked them, not because they were imposed upon him. And so I really think that the strength of the nominees is that Joe Biden certifies them, validates them. And that's the accountability of a presidential leader. On the whole, I remain impressed by them. I would point out that any money that's left over from the stimulus, the original bailout and COVID will be in the stewardship of Janet Yellen as Secretary of Treasury. And I think there's somebody who will spend it wisely and well and quite humanely.
And on that note, we thank you both, Mark Shields, David Brooks. Have a great weekend.
Thank you.